This is the OTB Television Network, a service of Capital District Off-Track Betting.
Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning and welcome to Racing Across America on this Sunday morning. I'm Seth Merrow. Thanks for joining us. A snowy Sunday morning. My commute home last night was kind of a crawl, a slog up the Northway, as we did get hit with some snow. Yesterday, there was also some snow at Aqueduct, but they moved through the day. Boy, they got hit kind of early, and it was coming down. It looked like it was coming down pretty good at Aqueduct, but they got through the day down there. We'll take a look at some of the stakes action from there yesterday. Nice stakes action really around the country. We'll take a look at Aqueduct and some fairgrounds, but there was some nice stakes action also at Gulfstream over at Tampa as well on a fun day. We'll, as I say, review some of that in this first segment. Second segment, we'll do a little handicapping, maybe take a quick look and go through today's rainbow sequence at Gulfstream. And towards the end of the program, we'll take a look at some stakes action from Laurel, because that wasn't on the network yesterday, so we didn't get a chance to see some of those Laurel stakes. But their winter stakes program is kind of fun. Every few weeks they have a nice stakes day, and yesterday was one of them. And the results there then will play into the next stakes day, or some of these horses will go out to other venues as well. So we're taking a little bit of a look at that. We'll be joined by Frank Vespi from theracingbiz.com. He was at Laurel yesterday, so we'll get a heads up from him on some of that action yesterday at Laurel. Do want to remind you that today there's a 1% bonus on your Aqueduct wagers. There are some restrictions, so check out the website for more information there. Today, there's also a $300 OTB live bankroll. I will have $300 to play during the day. You have to come on down here to the Clubhouse Racebook, but we'd love to see you. Love to get a big crowd. It's always a lot of fun. Put your name in the hat between 11 and 2. At 2 o'clock, we choose 20 people to be on the bankroll team. They'll split up the winnings at the end of the day. Hopefully, I can turn that $300 into much, much more. That'll be the game plan. But we will be out in the front portion of the Clubhouse Racebook with picks and plays during the afternoon. Even if you don't get on the bankroll team, you can maybe use some of the information we toss out to cash some tickets. Again, it's always a lot of fun, the bankroll days. A lot of times we'll do them on Fridays. I said yesterday, if Fridays doesn't work for you because maybe you're at work, then a Sunday bankroll is perfect. Come on down this afternoon, Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue in Albany. Same spot for Martin Luther King Day tomorrow with a $100 Winnebet contest here at the Clubhouse Racebook. With the holiday Monday, that means some of the bigger venues will be running, and that means lots of great racing action to take advantage of. Come on down to the Clubhouse Racebook and watch and wager on that racing action right here, and also participate in the $100 Winnebet. Again, 711 Central Avenue in Albany. Do want to thank our friends at Gulfstream Park for their sponsorship. Gulfstream Park, champions start here. Thanks to them. Next weekend, Pegasus Day down at Gulfstream. A nice lineup of stakes action down there. Of course, later in the meet, we will be headed down for Florida Derby Day, the end of March. That's always a lot of fun. But as I say, they had a nice stakes day yesterday. Pegasus weekend coming up. That winter meet at Gulfstream really has become just loaded with lots of great stakes action, notable names, familiar names on the human side for us, too, on the you know, trainer and jockey side with a lot of New York-based guys winding up at Gulfstream in the winter. So, again, thanks to Gulfstream for their sponsorship. We're happy to do it for a meet that is so productive. From the start of the year, it then points to horses you can watch the rest of the year. And speaking of horses you can watch the rest of the year, that happened yesterday at Aqueduct as well. They had a couple of stakes races, but the notable one was the Toboggan. I will say on the New York Bred side, a Freud of Mama looked pretty good in the Franklin Square, stringing a couple of stakes wins together on the New York Bred side for a three-year-old filly. Again, a Freud of Mama looked very impressive in that Franklin Square. But the Toboggan Grade 3 event, four-year-olds and up, going 7 furlongs. The notable horse in here was the Return of Mind Control. Had not been seen since winning the Grade 1 Jerkins at Saratoga, so had been on the sideline for quite a while. I liked American Anthem, the number 2 horse. They looked at the results after the race, and Mind Control, from the pan, it's a little hard to tell, but Mind Control does come out a little bit towards American Anthem, the number 2 horse. Stewards looked and didn't do anything. I can't disagree with that. I think it was the right move. But you see, Mind Control, the number 8, has the lead. After the race, John Velasquez said, I don't like to get to the lead too early because then he waits on horses, and he does. And you think Mind Control will get swallowed up, but no. He digs down very gutsy, holds off Nicodemus and Sunny Ridge, the number 4, number 1. American Anthem again winds up a close-up 4th after, again, a little bit of trouble. I had American Anthem on top. American Anthem, top of the stretch, looked like in a good position. And then, I don't know, a little green, or I don't know whether the jockey was having trouble switching leads. American Anthem, the number 2 horse, was right there in 3rd at this point. And it looks like, yeah, he's going to get in gear and get going. And he just never does. And that may have been what the stewards were looking at. I mean, I think he's plugging away here. So you could make the argument he was going to at least potentially get 2nd or 3rd. But the stewards said, you know, what happened did not affect the outcome, so they didn't switch it. As I say, when you look at the head-on, Mind Control does come out a little bit and kind of bumps with American Anthem. I could have seen the case either way in that one, but I was probably tilting towards keeping it the way it was because I didn't think it was enough of a bump or a move out to make that much of a difference. So I had no objection with the stewards leaving it the way it was, which then put Mind Control in the winner's seat, came under the wire first, stayed in first. And again, that was a nice performance coming off a layoff from the end of August until middle of January, comes back, wins a Grade 3 event. Again, John Velasquez said, didn't want to get to the lead too early. He waits on horses. But then once they got there, he re-engaged and holds them off. Chart Margin was a nose. Nicodemus a nose in front of Sunny Ridge, who was 3/4 in front of American Anthem. Nice performance by the top 4, but a really gutsy and nice performance by Mind Control. Coming out of the three-year-old season, first time against older horses. That was notable. Off the long layoff, gets the win. And trainer Greg Sacco subsequently said, probably going to wait, or potentially will wait, for the Grade 1 Carter coming up in April as the next start for Mind Control. We'll see. You would think Carter and Met Mile will be on the radar for Mind Control going forward. Potentially, you know, we'll see them up at Saratoga and some of the nice sprint-type races up there. Off of this, it looks like a nice four-year-old season is in the offing, potentially, for Mind Control. So, again, nice stake at Aqueduct, Snowy Aqueduct yesterday, but a horse that was worth kind of waiting on the return for, and the, as I say, the four-year-old debut. Let's take a look at the stakes action down at Fairgrounds yesterday, highlighted a little bit later. We'll get to the 2 3-year-old races, but they had some undercard stakes that were also very nice. The Marie Krantz Memorial, mile and a 16th on the grass. I thought La Signere was interesting in here. That one winds up 6th as the second choice. Close-up second choice at 9-5. Also at 9-5, though, was the number 1 Quebec. Adam Biskitza on board, and Quebec, the number 1 horse, is essentially going to take them, is going to take them all the way around. We'll have to hold off a hard-charging number 3, Don't Tell Marge, and number 4, Stave. They're both, as I say, making good runs at prices. Quebec, the 9-5 favorite, the two horses behind 17-1 and 8-1, but they are going to be right there pushing this one. But Biskitsa keeps Quebec going just enough to hold on for the neck victory. It was ahead between second and third. So as I say, three of them right there at the wire. But Quebec, Joe Sharp trainee, currently a Joe Sharp trainee, had just recently moved into the Joe Sharp barn, ran fourth in the Panzeretta back at the end of December, turf sprint down there. That was on a yielding turf course, a little bit better turf condition yesterday, and back to two turns where this horse is probably a little more comfortable looking down the page at the results for Quebec. But a nice stakes victory for that one on the undercard yesterday at Fairgrounds. The Louisiana was a grade 3 event for handicap division type runners. Gunnet was interesting to me for Steve Asmussen. A couple of starts back at Churchill, had won an allowance race. Last time out had run second in an optional claimer, but I thought Gunnet was going to be a little bit interesting. Tone Broke was also interesting to me. Tone Broke for Asmussen had run third in last year's Queen's Plate, then had won the Prince of Wales at Fort Erie, and also won the Breeders' at Woodbine, so the last two legs of the Canadian Triple Crown. Subsequently tries the turf going long at Belmont in the Jockey Club Derby and was a disappointing ninth. But this was the comeback. This is a horse that did have dirt experience and good dirt experience. So Tone Broke was interesting as well. Blended Citizen was in here. And Silver Dust is a horse that I mentioned to Joe Christofek when we had him on the show yesterday for Brett Calhoun. Nice record over the fairground surface. Silver Dust, 5 exacta finishes and 6 starts down at the fairgrounds. And it will, in fact, be Silver Dust. The betting public looked at that one. The great fairgrounds experience coming off a close-up second in the Lucas Classic at Churchill in the prior start. Silver Dust, the number 2 horse, easy to pick out there. And obviously popular at the betting windows as a gray horse. But he just kind of gets the lead and opens up here. Chart margin is 4.5. He was the 3-5 favorite subsequently. Blended Citizen runs second. Gunnet runs third. Blended Citizen just getting up past Gunnet late. But neither one of those, any challenge to the winner, Silver Dust. So Brett Calhoun, nice 6-year-old runner in Silver Dust. Performance that validated the horse for a course kind of an angle he has going there. He finished second in this race, Silver Dust, last year, and then came back to win the Mineshaft subsequently, and then at the end of the meet ran second in the New Orleans. You would have to think that's probably the same path this year. For a horse that likes fairgrounds, you're probably going to stick around and go on their handicap division path towards the end of the meet. The Colonel Bradley, also on the undercard amongst the stakes yesterday at the fairgrounds in the Colonel Bradley. Mr. Misunderstood looked very good to me for Brad Cox, coming out of a win in the River City at Churchill Downs. That's a race that I think year after year is kind of productive, and you can watch horses coming out of that in subsequent starts later in the year or in the beginning of the new year. But boy, Mr. Misunderstood winds up 8th in the field of 8 and was never in the mix as the 3-2 favorite. The winner in here is going to be number 4, Don't Blame Rocket. Number 9, Midnight Tea, will run 2nd. And number 11, Factor This, runs 3rd. 6-1, 17-1, and 5-1. And as I say, number 14, you can see him. I don't know if you can see him. He may be off the screen there in the back of the pack, Mr. Misunderstood. So I didn't see comments from Brad Cox. I'll look, and if I find something a little bit later this morning, mention it this afternoon when we're doing, well, OTB Live is going to be out on the front side, but I can still mention it. But Don't Blame Rocket, Norm Cassie, who probably 2 years out on his own now. And it seemed like Norm Cassie, son of Mark Cassie, who was Mark's assistant for a long time, and as I say, went out on his own a couple of years ago now, it is, and seemed like you got off to kind of a slow start to the career, but you knew, having been Mark's assistant and probably with some of the connections he built up there and whatnot, it was only a matter of time. Last year, Norm, 17% overall, so a good percentage, and seems to be starting this year very nicely with horses at a couple of different venues in the wintertime. And don't blame Rocket, get some nice stakes victory yesterday at the fairgrounds in the Colonel Bradley. All right, let's get to those two three-year-old races that wound up the card yesterday at the fairgrounds, because they will clearly play into the Oaks Trail and the Derby Trail, Kentucky Oaks, Kentucky Derby, but also play into the Louisiana Derby, Louisiana Oaks. I think it's actually the Fairgrounds Oaks and the Louisiana Derby, but at the end of the Fairgrounds meet. I think there are horses to watch coming out of these. In other words, it was a kind of an inscrutable result. We'll see. Last year, and it played out that way as we got into the summer. Last year, it seemed like just when you kind of landed on a three-year-old, more on the boy's side than the girl's side, but just when you landed on one, subsequently in the next race, they would run a dud and somebody else would kind of move to the forefront. And so the three-year-old picture last year was a little bit up in the air, kind of until we got to the end of the year, and Honor Code stepped up a little bit and Spun to Run was good, obviously, at the end of the year. Maximum Security validated what we saw from him. But overall, first half of the year last year was a little iffy. So we'll see. But again, I thought there was a couple of three-year-olds to watch coming out of yesterday's races. On the three-year-old girl's side, it was the Silver Bullet Day at a mile and 70 for $150,000. And Finite looked like the one to beat, went off at 3-5 for Steve Asmussen. This is a horse coming into it, 5 starts, 3 wins, 2 seconds. A couple of the wins were 2 stakes races in the prior 2 starts up at Churchill. Finite is the number 6 horse and will hold off by a neck, number 3, Ursula. Ursula lightly raced for Michael Stidham, so that was a nice performance from Ursula as well. But Finite, now 3-for-3 in the last 3 starts, all in stakes races. The nice late run also from number 1, Tempers Rising, for Dallas Stewart, getting up there, as I say, for 3rd. But Finite, a nice 3-year-old filly, obviously. Ursula, that was only her 4th career start, first time around 2 turns. So again, Stidham with a nice 3-year-old filly as well with Ursula. And the late run from Tempers Rising, I would think, indicates she is going to be a player as well as we move along this 3-year-old filly trail over the next couple of months heading to the Kentucky Oaks. But Finite validated what the betting public thought and what was there on the page coming out of the 2 stakes wins at Churchill Downs, as yet another stakes win for Steve Asmussen and Winchell Thoroughbreds. And I have a note here on that one as well in the follow-up articles to the Silver Bullet Day yesterday. Steve Asmussen joins Hetty Company, becomes only the 3rd trainer to train 1,000 stakes winners. He did that yesterday with Finite in the Silver Bullet Day. Becomes only the 3rd trainer to win 1,000 stakes races. Who do you think the other two are? Can you make a guess? That I can tell you, one was the pupil of the other, and they're both very prominent names. Dwayne Lucas and Todd Pletcher, the only 2 other ones with 1,000 stakes winners on their resume. Asmussen came out of this saying February 15th, Rachel Alexandra down at Fairgrounds, probably up next for Finite. All right, and on the 3-year-old boys' side, the LeCompte, it was a nice full field of 13 in here. Lynn's Map Scratch, that was the number 14 horse. But again, we wound up with a field of 13 and a number of them that had only to run a good race to kind of stamp themselves as horses to watch. I talked yesterday about Silver State. I thought that one was a real player off the first 2 starts for Asmussen. A nice win in the debut, then a good second in optional claiming company on a sloppy track, both at Churchill. That one was interesting to me. Silver State, I was surprised from a 5-1 morning line, went off as the co-choice, actually, at $3.20, 3-1. Now, slightly more favored was Scabbard. I'm assuming a few more dollars in the wind pool, Scabbard. Scabbard, the number four horse, winds up fifth. Silver State, as I say, I was kind of surprised the horse took that kind of action because I thought there'd be a little value there, but winds up an okay second in the third career start. Enforceable for Mark Cassie winds up to be the winner. Kind of continuing to validate the Kentucky Jockey Club. Enforceable ran fourth in that Kentucky Jockey Club, and I'll just note again, Tis the Law ran third, and I've said Tis the Law, I think, is better than that race may indicate for people. I think he might come out of that with education. And don't forget, Tis the Law finished in front of the winner we're seeing here, Enforceable. Enforceable wins. Silver State, as you saw, got up for second. And then Mr. Monomoy, the number two horse, ran third for Brad Cox, the sibling to Monomoy Girl. I think all three of those are interesting. Finnick the Fierce runs fourth, but I think all three of the, all of the top three finishers are horses that are a little bit interesting now moving forward. Obviously, mostly Enforceable, but Silver State, that was only the third career start. First time in stakes company. So again, the nice second place finish there. He'll be one to watch from Asmussen as well. So there's your three-year-old action down at the fairgrounds. All right, that takes you through some of the stakes action yesterday. And again, those fairgrounds races will play into, they have a nice slate of stakes from the beginning of their meet to the end of the meet in all the various divisions. So the winners yesterday will be worth paying attention to as we move forward on their stakes schedule. Some of them will wind up at other venues as well. Oaklawn opens up soon, so some may wind up going up there, but worth paying attention to those results yesterday at Fairgrounds going forward. Worth paying attention to Mind Control on that comeback effort. That was very nice. We'll see. Again, it looks like Greg Sacco was feeling like Carter may be his next start, so we may not see him for, you know, the better part of 3 months, Mind Control, but it was a good-looking comeback effort for him. Also, stakes action yesterday, as they say, we weren't watching it during the afternoon on the network, but stakes action at Laurel. Frank Vespi will be up in a few to recap that Laurel stakes action, but we're going to take a break, and when we come back, just going to run through, I think maybe a quick run through the Rainbow Six sequence at Gulfstream, because again, they're continuing now to guarantee at this point $3.5 million. Chalked out a little bit yesterday, but you could have had it with a reasonable ticket. I missed the second week in a row. Not in a row. It was two Sundays ago, 2 weeks back from today, where I missed like that. And yesterday I missed like that again in the next to the last leg. So it was a little bit frustrating. But again, we'll take a break, come back, and just take a quick run through the Rainbow sequence, toss some ideas out there, and maybe tempt you into putting a ticket for yourself together. So all that next, a little bit later on, Frank Vespi. Stay tuned.
Not at the track and not near a computer? No problem. Wager with Capital OTBs and you'll never get shut out again. It's quick, simple to use, and guarantees your wagers are accurate and placed on time. For more information, visit CapitalOTB.com or call Capital OTB's customer service hotline at 800-292-BET. Wager with Capital OTBs and you'll never get shut out again.
Welcome to Albany County, an incredible destination to live, work, and play. With easy connections to more than a dozen cities from our vibrant modern airport, it's a short trip downtown to a hive of culture and amusement. From world-class shows at the newly renovated Times Union Center to reliving the past at the New York State Museum. From outdoor recreation to shopping to nightlife, Albany County has something for everyone. We'll see you soon.
Visit Rivers Casino and Resort, the Capital Region's only destination for live table game action and the hottest new slots paying out millions. And they're off. Horse betting is now at Rivers Casino and Resort with Capital off-track betting terminals and live tellers located just off the gaming floor at Van Slick's. Get in on all the action at Rivers Casino and Resort.
Wagering on horse racing just got a lot easier at Capital OTB with our newly designed state-of-the-art mobile wagering site. Everything you need is right here on one easy-to-navigate mobile platform. Set your favorite tracks, pick your horses, place your bets, all with a simple tap of the screen. Plus, you'll have access to Capital OTB TV for all our network programming. So log on to CapitalOTBBet.com and see just how easy wagering on horse racing can be.
Welcome back. Sunday edition of Racing Across America. I'm Seth Merrill. Thanks for joining us. Yesterday, I was in, obviously, OTB Live during the rainbow sequence, and I've said you can take a shot now with the pool being the way it is because you can put a reasonable ticket together, and even the consolation, even if it's logical, you might get $600, $800, $1,200. The last couple of days, that hasn't been the case. It's been logical, but it's been kind of chalky. Now, Friday, we had that situation where Hidden Squirrel scratched and scratched into then a short-priced Pletcher, who won the race. So anybody who had Hidden Squirrel winds up scratching into the winning favorite. If you had both of those on your rainbow ticket, which I imagine a lot of people did, you wound up with two winning rainbow tickets. So Friday, I thought there was kind of an explanation for the short price on the rainbow. Yesterday, I mean, it was logical. I still thought it came up a little bit light, but Starship Jubilee maybe was an absolute free square for a lot of people. And I subsequently looked at the remaining tickets and mentioned on the air yesterday that the majority, I think 60% of the tickets moved from the Starship Jubilee race, which is a pretty good number from race to race. Sequence yesterday, $6 and change, $2 and change, $2.80 with Starship Jubilee. A couple of $7 horses, the $10 horse. The $10 horse in the next to the last leg, and that's the one that just got me, and I was three or four deep in there. The favorite, Red Crescent, just the last bob got nipped. But the $10 horse I thought would add some value, but then a $5 horse, three favorites, and the other three were a couple of them, I think, the second choice. The $10 horse may have been the third choice or whatnot. Paid $342, which, again, to me was a little bit light given the money that was put in yesterday. But, I mean, you really only had one double-digit horse, and that was $10.40. And another three of them were $6 or low. So it's hard to judge this one, although, as I say, Starship Jubilee, the one on Friday seemed to have a little more of a story behind the short price with the scratch of Hidden Squirrel, the late scratch, gate scratch. But this one, Starship Jubilee, may have pulled some of the value out, $342. We'll see. They're guaranteeing $3.5 million, so a lot of money goes into the pool. Reasonable ticket, And if you put a reasonable, my ticket had 30 something, I think. And as I say, I just missed. Mine would have been shorter, but if I could have turned 30 into 200, wouldn't have been jumping up and down with celebration, but still would have been a nice ticket to cash. Sixth race kicks it off today at about 2:30, and I will say this is a tough way to start the rainbow sequence. Maiden special is going a mile on the grass. I have a 10, 6, 5, and 8. I'd probably be tempted, and I haven't evaluated this sequence, pared it down to putting my numbers down and seeing where I can maybe go a little bit lighter and see if hopefully find one that maybe you can kind of single on. So I don't know what the game plan would be for this first leg, but I'd be tempted to use all. I'd be tempted to use a lot more even. But I think, as I say, it's a race where first-time starters, lightly raced horses that have the potential to move forward. It's a little bit of a question mark. But I went 10, 6, 8, and 5, Declaration Warrior, the Mark Cassie trainee. I thought was okay in debut. Cassie horses often do better in the second start. So I think this one, Edgar Zayas on board, who had a nice day over at Tampa yesterday, winning a couple of nice stakes races over Tampa for Zayas. So he comes back over to the East Coast and jumps on board Declaration Warrior. Duchess of Sussex, 10-1 on the morning line. I don't know whether we'll get that. The Graham Motion Runner was nice over Tampa in debut, leading much of the way and just getting caught late. But I think that's the kind of effort that'll set the horse up nicely for the second start of the career. Pletcher has Philly Special. I just think this horse is maybe better than we saw. It was in an off-the-turfer in the career debut. Gets to the turf today. They paid $300,000 for the Daughter of Blame. I'm going to look for a better effort from that one. And then Pearlescent, second-time starter from Bill Mott, that like Declaration Warrior and Duchess of Sussex, I think can benefit from the career debut. So it's a tough way to start. I don't jump into this with a lot of confidence on mine as compared to maybe pointing to some others that I could make a similar case for. But in the sixth at Gulfstream, kicking off the rainbow, 10, 6, 5, and 8. Seventh race, which is leg 2, 5, 3, 7, and 10. Number 5 being Flow Motion. Just has some good numbers. Dropped down to this level last time and was a little bit of a disappointing fourth. But was up close early. That doesn't necessarily seem to be the running style. Picks up Irad Ortiz today. I think may give a better effort this afternoon. Till the End has tossed a couple of numbers in the last two starts. Both of those wins last time at this level. Should be in the thick of things again today. And heavy and hot and heavy, who seems in good form. A couple of seconds bookending a win in the last three starts. Those were against a little bit lesser. Three back was in for this tag, but a conditional B condition tag. So again, a little bit lesser, but just looking at this group, I think is going to fit okay. Also have the 10 in the bottom of the mix, but if I had to, you know, as I say, I haven't pared down my ticket yet, but probably the top three will be the ones I look at in this race. 5, 3, 7, and 10. Race number 8 at Gulfstream Park today. Third leg of the rainbow. I have a 2, 1, 6, and 5. Rayo, my king. Some nice positional early speed. I think class-wise takes a dip that may be beneficial, but it's also a little bit of a question mark. They claimed the horse 3 back for 16. Got a win, though, in the subsequent start, which I think financially probably puts them in a spot where they can make a move like this. Off of the win in the first off the claim, they went up the ladder a little bit class-wise and ran fourth. But now a little bit of a layoff for a couple of months and come back at the reduced rate. As I say, it just raises some questions. But given that win off the claim, I think the horse will be all right. We will see. Moving into a new barn. Again, claim 3 back, so it wasn't a claim or anything, but does move into a new barn. So there are some question marks that have to be answered. But off the past couple, Rayo, my king, seems like a player. Follow his footsteps in the second spot off a nice win. Claimed out of that one, moves up, but was claimed by Victor Barbosa. He's just very, very good off the claim. So you have to have the one in the mix. Frank Alone in the third spot. There are some numbers underneath that are pretty good. In this one, I probably, you know, again, this is one of the races where maybe you can keep the ticket reasonable. I'd probably use the top two in here. I have a 2, 1, 6, and 5. Race number 9 at Gulfstream, 7, 8, 3, and 6 for me. Number 7 is Bourbon in May. Couple of nice wins coming into this. Two starts back, a conditional claimer. Last time, a starter allowance. I think they both stack up nicely with this non-winners of one other than this afternoon. And again, non-winners of one other than this one, obviously with the two wins in the last couple of starts, comes in really finding the condition to his liking with 3 overall wins and 8 starts. But again, they were in races that aren't restricted by this particular non-winners of one condition. So I think Bourbon in May, Todd Pletcher, Javier Castellano looks pretty good. Kadar for Mike Maker coming out of a string of stakes races, I think might find this more proper non-winners of one level to his liking. And then Largent in the third spot. It's the other Pletcher, the other half of the longer half of an uncoupled entry, showing a first-time gelding symbol. Hasn't been seen since May, but only a couple of starts. And they were kind of promising starts. So we'll look for Largent to maybe come back and be a little bit live in here. Everyone Loves James moves out of my man's barn. Had been running early in the career, or for much of the career, for Jonathan Shepherd. Moves onto the Shepherd barn. in fact, was in this barn last year down at Gulfstream, so I think it may just be a geographical thing. When he goes south, he moves into this barn. But everyone loves James on a best effort. Also a little bit interesting. This one, this race would be a little tougher. This is one where I'd have to put the numbers on the page and then try to pare down a little bit. The ninth race at Gulfstream, 7, 8, 3, and 6. Race number 10, State Bred Optional Claimers going 6. 10th race, I have it 8, 4, 5, and 3. The number 8, Sayonara Baby, comes out of the Glitter Woman. Nice second place finish in the stakes race after having broken the maiden for a claiming tag. So it was an ask. You know, let's see what kind of class we have on this horse. Goes out of a maiden claiming and runs a good second in a stakes race. So I think it's going to fit in with this non-winners in one condition in the optional claimer. Dancing Destroyer, nice improving buyer numbers. Start 1, 2, 3, to 4 for trainer Norm Cassie. One last time to break the maiden. So those numbers are validated also by the finishing positions and the form. Should be a player in here. And let's be honest, has been facing better. Last time threw in a little bit of a dud over at Gulfstream Park West in a stakes race. But the race just before that was very good in an optional claimer. Again, you would think against a little bit better given the condition. And off of that race and some subsequent workouts that say the horse is in very good form, Castellano on board, let's be honest, should be a player as well. In the 10th at Gulfstream, 8, 4, 5, and 3. And wrapping up the Rainbow Six sequence, maiden specials going a mile and a 16th, 2, 7, 6, and 1. The number 2 in front seems pretty solid for Shug. On the numbers, this horse kind of, I would say, stands out, but it's not an overwhelming edge, but it's an edge. The number 4 horse for Cherie DeVoe has a couple of numbers that are kind of comparable, but I'll give the edge to Shug and Jose Ortiz. In between those, I put Tap It to Ride for Todd Pletcher just because I wondered if that one may not benefit from the first couple and move forward a few points. And the firster from Chad Brown is interesting to me. North Broadway. So there's a little bit of a Saratoga angle to the name. Chad Brown, Peter Brandt, first-time starter that they paid $750,000 for. So, again, it's another race where I'm going to have to look, and I'd be tempted to use all 4 of them if possible. Not only because I like all 4, but I always like to have 4 alive when I get to the last leg. Then you can have, yeah, maybe a little bit of breathing room. But in the 11th and final at Gulfstream, 2, 7, 6, and 1. So, again, there are some ideas in the rainbow today. I have to, as I say, kind of sit down and really, I typically put the numbers of all the horses I like, and then you add up the cost of the ticket. If it's too expensive, you start to look and pare things down at that point and get to your comfort zone price-wise. But, again, $3.5 million guaranteed today, so jump in the pool. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, Frank Vespi from theracingbiz.com. Great place to follow racing news from the Mid-Atlantic region. Frank was at Laurel yesterday. They had a nice stakes card. We'll recap some of those stakes coming up right after this. Stay tuned.
Where's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you where's the best sports bar in the capital region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Come on.
I want sales reports on my desk by Monday.
Whoops. My bad.
Love racing? RTN brings you every live simulcast on your home television, plus live video streaming and race replays on your PC and mobile devices. To order, visit RTN.tv. RTN, a breed apart.
Here in upstate New York, no one provides bettors with more wagering options than Capital OTB. Our network of branch and easy bet locations stretches from the mid-Hudson Valley all the way to the Canadian border and west to central New York. So whether you need to place a bet, fund your Capital Bets account, or watch the next big race, all the action is just around the corner. A full list of our branch and easy bet locations can be found online at CapitalOTB.com. Capital OTB, the better and most convenient choice for wagering in upstate New York.
Welcome back to Racing Across America on this Sunday morning. As promised before the break, joined now by our friend Frank Vespi from the RacingBiz.com, a great spot to catch up on all the racing news in the Mid-Atlantic region. Frank, good morning.
Good morning, Seth. Good to be with you.
Happy to have you with me. Let's update folks. You and I were talking before we went on the air about the weather down there, and let's update folks. Nice stakes day yesterday. I said at the top of the show, the stakes schedule at Laurel is a lot of fun. Seems like every 3 weeks or so, there's a nice day of stakes races. Yesterday was one of those, and one day plays into the next stakes day coming up 3 or 4 weeks down the road. And it's a lot of fun, but you have to dodge some weather bullets. And I said to you as I was doing the OTB Live yesterday, early on, second or third race, it really started coming down at Aqueduct with snow. What was it like weather-wise at Laurel yesterday?
Well, the predictions had been for maybe even a couple inches of snow. And when I walked out of my house to go to the track in the morning, it was just pelting down sleet, and I thought, boy, I don't know if we're going to get a card in today. But it actually cleared out, and it was cold, but it was basically, and it was cold and gray, but it was basically clear other than that. So it ended up being really an okay day. For the middle of January, we really can't complain.
Yeah, again, you're playing outdoors, and you have to deal with the weather, and so some of that is going to happen, but if you avoided things yesterday, you did okay and got some stakes action under our belts. Frank, before we get to the stakes action, I was looking at the Racing Biz this morning. You had written an article, in fact, new whip rules, riding crop rules down in Maryland. Give us an update there.
Yeah, the commission adopted, not as a rule per se, but sort of as guidance for the stewards and the jockeys, a guideline that basically said limits jocks to 10 strikes of the whip in the course of a race and no more than 3 in a row. And, I think what the rule is really designed to do is sort of prevent the worst things from happening, you know, where the guy's really just beating on the horse. And in the first 3 days that they had the rule, which was not this weekend, but last weekend, they got three riders who had violated the rule, one of whom had hit the horse 18 times and told the stewards afterwards, basically, I just had a brain fart and forgot, and, you know, that's it. So everybody seems to think what's going to happen. You know, the stewards were happy with how the riders were responding to it, you know, when I have talked to them in the last couple of weeks. And I think the general thought is that the riders themselves will kind of be very conscious of this and kind of police themselves as to how it goes forward. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, I think in the longer term, what you're going to see is the Mid-Atlantic probably adopt a more or less uniform rule about use of the crop. But this was probably a good place to start.
Yeah, and I want you to bring that up because it's something that obviously the entire industry is looking at. And so when a venue comes up with a new rule, it's interesting to see how it works out. And then if it works out someplace, maybe other places can pick up on that rule. And you've kind of alluded to it when you talked about last weekend. I think when they do this anywhere, it's going to be a learning curve. Because you talk about that 3 in the row, we all have seen, you know, heated stretch battles where boom, 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 they're trying to get their horse going. So I think it's going to be a learning curve for these guys to kind of get into the gist of the rule and limit themselves.
Oh, I absolutely agree with that. And I suspect you're going to see both things. You're going to see the guy who hits the horse 12 times because he needs to try to get the horse up, and the guy who gets to around 10 and is hesitant because he doesn't want to get fined. And, you know, one rider said to me, you've got to be aware of this, because particularly if you're riding in a cheaper race, if you win the race and get fined, you basically rode to pay the fine. So you've got to be aware that, you know, of what you're doing out there. So I definitely think, you know, this first month or two, it is going to be a learning curve, as you said. And one of the things that the stewards said to me was that they decided, in consultation with the jockeys, not to have a warning period, because they kind of felt like if you start warning guys, you know, there's 40 guys in the room, it might be May until everybody's gotten a warning, and then you can start implementing the rules. So they said, let's just go ahead and do it. And, you know, everybody kind of agreed, we'll take our chances with that. And So you're going to see some people making mistakes and some people getting fined for being overzealous. But, you know, again, I think the point here is you don't want guys wailing on horses. You don't want guys hitting horses that have stopped responding or going backwards. You want them to be aware of what they're doing with the crop.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. All right, let's jump into the stakes action from yesterday. Let's start and just go in chronological order. The first up was the What a Summer. Fillies and Mares, four-year-olds and up, going 6.5. The big favorite was the number 3, Needs Supervision. Had gone up to Aqueduct and tried the grade 3 Gopher Wand in the previous start. Had run 4th in there. But the start just before was a nice win at 7 furlongs and the safely kept at Laurel. Based on that, the betting public made Needs Supervision the 3-5 favorite. But gets upset. The winner in here will be number 2, Victim of Love, at 9-1. Second choice, Hey Mama Luke, at 2-1. Winds up finishing last in the field of 6. So the two shorter prices disappoint a little bit, as it is Victim of Love we're seeing here out in front down the stretch, and winds up a chart margin of 3.75 over the 3-5 favorite, Needs Supervision. Your thoughts in the Water Summer?
Well, certainly in the Blind Squirrel Finds a Nut category, Victim of Love was my top choice on the racing.com. So
$21, so very good.
Yeah, I was happy about that every once in a while. The interesting thing is that the track has been, the last couple of days, been pretty tight, been pretty kind to speed. Victim of Love got cooked in the early speed on in the safely kept. That was a race that set up just perfectly for Needs Supervision to rally from the rear of the field, which she did. And I kind of felt like this was a race that didn't have that level of speed. The Victim of Love would either lead or, you know, be right off the pace early and might just have plenty to stay on late. And that's exactly how it played out. So I was happy to see that. A good ride from Wes Hamilton to get this horse in the game right away and go on to win. Need Supervision, you know, kind of punched through at the end, came up for second, but really not for 1 second was she a threat to win this race.
And a Todd Beatty trainee, and as you would expect, based over at Penn National, working over there, but pops over to Laurel occasionally, and it was beneficial on Saturday.
Yeah, maybe headed to the Fritchie for her next start. That's what they were, depending on how she comes out and all the things, but that's kind of what his assistant, who is his brother Tom, was saying after the race.
Makes sense. And that's one of the reasons I said at the top of the show, I like to look at these races. We didn't have Laurel on yesterday during the OTB live show during the afternoon, so a lot of people might not have had a chance to see these, but they will play into those stakes races a little bit later the winter, or these horses may move out to other venues and try stakes action as well. So I wanted to take a look and give a heads up to folks. All right, let's move on to the Geisha on the card yesterday. Fillies and Mares, four-year-olds and up, going the one-turn mile for $75,000. Another upset, the number 4, Anna's Bandit, 2-5 favorite, but again winds up second behind another front-running winner at a price. Artful Splatter, I love the name, Artful Splatter, at 8-1 gets it done. Again, leading all the way around, so the track was maybe playing a little bit to these types yesterday. Give us your thought, Negasha.
Yeah, this actually was an interesting race. If you show the stretch run, there was a lengthy, there was an objection from Xavier Perez, who rode Anna's Bandit, an objection from Jerry Robb, who trains Anna's Bandit.
Oh, we just saw the horse come out. That would have been a kind of a lame move. I think he was clear when he came out.
Well, and it's an interesting, I thought it was an interesting sort of case, because she was clear. I mean, she was clear, absolutely. She was a couple lengths ahead, but she came out 4 or 5 paths. Anna's Bandit had to veer in. She switched leads when she veered in, which made, she lost a little bit of forward momentum, didn't get beat by much, I guess a half length.
Yeah, it's a half length,
margin.
Yeah. Could have made the case.
It's an interesting
We're watching the head on here, and she does come out. It's probably 6 paths, it's interesting.
Yes, so it's an interesting question, and I think kind of where you stand on this one depends on where you sit. Obviously, if you're Jerry Robb, you're pretty upset with this. If you're Alex Cintron or Kieran McGee, who trained the winner, then you think they did exactly the right thing. But I think, you know, Anna's Bandit is great. She probably doesn't want a mile, 7/8, probably her ideal distance. She'll come back and probably win next time going 7/8. Everything will be fine. But I think one thing that gets lost in the shuffle a little bit here is you want to give some credit to Kieran McGee here. He claims this horse for $16,000 out of a never-win-two race. She's now won four straight. Now she's won an allowance. She won a stake here. And Anna's Bandit is a real racehorse. I mean, Enchanted Ghost is a stakes winner. She came in third. Anna's Bandit has earned $700,000. She was second. So she beats these horses. I think a lot of things went her way yesterday. But, you know, Kieran McGee has really done a great job with this horse. And parenthetically, this was the first Jim Wolf, who's the owner who claimed this horse, has owned horses for a long time, has won almost 300 races as an owner, but this was his first stakes win as an owner, so kind of a neat moment for him.
Very good. They were both kind of win machines, because since the claim, Artful Splatter was 3-for-3 coming into the event. Anna's Bandit had a win streak of, six races? She's won 16 times in 32 starts, so she's a little bit of a win machine as well. And I must say, on first blush, that was kind of a no-brainer, no call to me. But yeah, as you looked at the head on and whatnot, and then looked at the margin on the chart of half a length, I guess you could have made an argument that the horse maybe should have come. I mean, for me, I always do it a percentage. For me, I probably would have been in a 70-30, don't take the horse down. But if they had taken the horse down, I think it wouldn't have been egregious.
I think that's probably right, and it's tough. The horse was clear, and that's got to count for something. It obviously took away some momentum from the other horse, and that probably counts for something too. It was kind of fun just talking to different people, because you were getting all different perspectives on it, and I had an interesting conversation with Xavier Perez, who rode Anna's Bandit after the race, and he was telling me, he said basically what I had just said, which is she really wants 7/8, 6 or 7 is really probably her prime distance. But he said, for some reason, when going 7/8 with Anna's Bandit, she puts herself right in the race. She's right there, right away, ready to go. Going a mile, you kind of got to scrub on her a little bit to get her engaged. She just doesn't quite engage early in the race. And actually, if you, I went back and watched the replay, you watch it, and early in the race, he's, not asking her per se, but shoving her a little bit, hey, pay attention, we got a race going on here. So for whatever reason, she just doesn't quite get herself involved early, and then doesn't have quite the same punch at the end as she does going shorter. But she's been a great story, a really fun story over the last couple of years here in Maryland.
All right, let's move on to the Jennings. This was a nice race yesterday. A mile, $75,000 up for grabs, but a nice race because there's some familiar names, some talent in here. The eventual winner will be the 30-cent to a dollar favorite, Always Mining. Last year's Federico Tessio winner certainly made some noise on that three-year-old scene last year down in Maryland. Now as a four-year-old, has a stakes win. But Bonus Points was also in there, a nice stakes performer down in the Mid-Atlantic region. The second choice in the betting at 9-2 was actually John Jones, the number one horse, who wound up running second. Bonus Points, a little bit disappointing. Third choice at 7-1, winds up fifth in the field of six. But it is Always Mining, who now has, after a couple of starts to end the year, that, a fifth in a stakes race and then a second in the Native Dancer. Question mark was, how's this horse go into his four-year-old season in a winning fashion? Always Mining kicking off the four-year-old season, as we see here, with the stretch run with a win. So that's a nice horse on the Mid-Atlantic region, and it'll be fun to follow in the handicap division.
Yeah, it absolutely will be. This is a horse that won 5 or 6 races in a row last year, several stakes heading into the Preakness, and sort of at the head of the lane in the Preakness was kind of a threat, and you're I think was maybe third, and you're kind of looking at him at that moment going, maybe, and then he kind of just ran out of horse at that point, but he doesn't want to go quite that far. He probably loves this one turn mile distance. That's probably going to hit him right between the eyes, and it was fun to see him get back to his winning ways. He had not won you know, after losing the Preakness, he had lost maybe four more after that, including two this year. But they gave him some time off after a race in July. I think it was the Indiana Derby. And then he came back in December, ran okay in a six furlong stake at Willow, then ran pretty well in the Native Dancer when second after leaving the furlong grounds. And yesterday he kind of put it all together and got it done. Julian Pimentel rode him for Kelly Rubley here, and just, you know, if you watch this race, like, this is how you ride a 3-10 favorite, right? You put them off the leader, you put them outside in the clear, you don't get in trouble, and then you go on and win when the running starts in the lane, and that's what they did. Talk to Greg and Carolyn Bentley, who are the owners of Runnymore Racing, and they're very excited. You know, this was really as Carolyn Bentley put it to me yesterday, last year was just a fairy tale for them, and they felt like Cinderella at the ball. And it looks like, you know, with the way the horse ran yesterday and hopefully rounding back into form, maybe the glass slipper still fits.
I like that. And, you know, we're in the neighborhood of $500,000 in earnings. That's the one everybody would love to have. All right, let's move on to the final stakes on the card, the Fireplug, $100,000. Four four-year-olds and up, sprinting 6.5. The betting public made Archcat the number two horse, the 2-1 favorite. That one had a little trouble in the race and winds up fourth. The winner will be number four, Honor La Fleet, at 6-1. At 5-1, Three Over Deuces runs second at 5-1. And as the second choice, Tis He the One for a trainer, Linda Rice, winds up running third in here. Your thoughts on the Fireplug?
Yeah, I didn't like Honor the Fleet, I can tell you that much, but obviously I was wrong about that. It's kind of interesting, he ended up kind of buried inside just in the second flight, and talking to Alex Cintron, who rode him, who won two stakes on the card after the race, they said, was that the trip you were looking for? And he said, no, not at all. He said, you know, I wanted to either lead, or when other horses went to the lead, I was going to say, okay, I'm going to sit third, just sort of to their outside. But then other horses came in outside of me, so I was stuck down on the rail. But, you know, he kind of said, I was kind of looking at where's the hole going to open up, and it opened up along the inside, which kind of worked out perfectly for him. And I got through inside to get up by a neck, a good effort from this horse. It was, according to Louis Albertrani, who's the trainer, it was also the first stakes win for this owner, too, Frank DeMarco, who's, according to Albertrani, who's an 89-year-old who lives in Wilmington or Newark, Delaware. So kind of a neat moment there. And this horse likely, I think, is going to head to the General George next, so that should be fun to see. Hopefully these two prep races, this race and the one earlier on the card for the fillies, produced a couple of runners for the graded stakes in February here at Lowell. So that should be fun to see. But nice effort from this horse. You know, like I said, I didn't like him. I didn't see this coming. But you know, he was dead game coming up the rail there.
Yeah, it was a fun stakes day yesterday. And as they say, that plays into the further stakes schedule at Laurel, or some of these horses may go out to other venues as well. But always like to take a look at some of the action down in Maryland. And Frank, before we let you go, also on theracingbiz.com, I saw your follow-up to Hamilton Smith winning career race number 2000, trainer down there. We had Linda Rice in New York doing it a few days ago as well. And for folks who don't follow the Laurel circuit, normally, but may pick up on it occasionally, always good to be aware of the trainers and jockeys you have to watch. And Hamilton Smith, a guy who in the Mid-Atlantic region, obviously very successful. And then you had a follow-up article where you're kind of pointing out trainers who are maybe sitting on big numbers coming up in their career.
Yeah, there are several. It was cool to see Hammy get that record that sort of milestone. And one thing that's interesting about him getting that is he did it. He's from South Carolina. He did it with a South Carolina bred who was bred by his brother, who's owned by his brother, and who was sired by the only starter Hammy has had in the Kentucky Derby, done talking. So it was definitely kind of an all in the family moment, which it was pretty cool to see. But yeah, I mean, there are a number of Laurel trainers that are sneaking up on some nice moments. The closest is Jerry Robb, who trains Anna's Bandit, who's less than 10 wins away from 2000, which is a pretty nice mark for a trainer. I think Del Capuano is sneaking up on 3,500, which he'll probably get this year, which outside of King Leatherbury, 6,000 odd is the most of any active Maryland trainer. So, and there are several others that are within, say, 50 or so wins of reaching a milestone. So yeah, it's kind of fun. I when he did that, I kind of was like, I wonder who else is close, and kind of looked, and really there are a number of trainers, so could be some milestones reached this year.
Yeah, it's always interesting to see those that are kind of sitting on the cusp and within shouting range at least. And so when trainers break through, that does then trigger, hey, who else is in the neighborhood? So it's good to get a list like that down in the Maryland region. Frank, as always, appreciate the visit. Again, folks can check out theracingbiz.com for your recaps on some of that stakes action yesterday, a little more info if they would like that, or other racing news from Maryland and that mid-Atlantic region. Frank, as always, appreciate it. We'll talk again.
It was my pleasure, Seth. Thanks for having me. Have a great Sunday.
You too. Frank Vespi from theracingbiz.com. Again, nice stakes action yesterday at Laurel as well. I didn't mention the Gulfstream Stakes, the Sunshine Millions. There were some nice results there. I had the results from Tampa here. Now I've moved them. But there were a couple of nice three-year-old stakes at Tampa yesterday that may be worth kind of paying attention to. As well, as I said, Edgar Zayas was on board both of the winners, so he had a nice sojourn across the state. Out in California, they had some Sunshine Millions. They had some Cal Cup races, the Toboggan in New York. It was really kind of for middle of January. Nice stakes day yesterday across the country. All right, before I wrap up, let me remind you, a 1% bonus day with your Aqueduct wagers today at Capital OTB Bet. There are some restrictions. Check the website for more information. Most importantly, hop in the car. Come down here. The hat is open for your entries right now. From 11 to 2, folks can come down, put their name in the hat. At 2 o'clock, we will select 20 folks. At 1, I'll start betting with a $300 bankroll. At the end of the day, the 20 folks on the bankroll team split up the winnings. Hopefully, I can knock it out of the park and juice up that $300 significantly. That'll be the fun of watching during the afternoon. Whether you're on the team or not, we'll toss out some picks and plays. We'll have some cut-ins here on the network as well. But we'd love to see you down here at the Racebook. It's always fun for the bankroll to have a big crowd down here rooting us along. 7-Eleven Central Avenue in Albany, the same location that tomorrow, Martin Luther King Day, we will have a $100 win-a-bet contest on the holiday with some of the bigger venues running on this Monday holiday. That's tomorrow, also here at the Clubhouse Racebook, 7-Eleven Central Avenue in Albany. All right, I'm going to wrap things up for this Sunday edition of Racing Across America. As always, we thank you for joining us, and we thank our friends at Gulfstream for sponsoring this program and some of the other programming and promotions here at OTB. They're sponsoring, in fact, the bankroll this afternoon. Gulfstream Park, champions start here. All right. Again, I'm going to wrap it up. Normally, I would say I'll be back in an hour or so with OTB Live, but in fact, I'll be back in probably better part of a couple of hours, a little under a couple hours, around 1 o'clock or so. We will kick off the bankroll, and again, we'll have some cut-ins live from the bankroll during the afternoon. I'm going to be out in the front portion of the race book giving some picks and plays during the afternoon, so stay tuned for all of that. In the meantime, plenty of great action coming up on the network this afternoon. Aqueduct, Gulfstream, Tampa, Fairgrounds. Cash some tickets, have some fun. As I say, I'll see you from the front side of the parlor in a couple hours or so. Stay tuned for that. We'll see you next time.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.